the theme is somewhat inspired by the lovely inquiries this afternoon. And the theme is the unobstructed heart. So the heart that knows no obstruction or barricade. And I'm going to begin tonight with a poem from Punjaji, H.W.L. Punja, the teacher who taught for many years in Lucknow, whom I had the pleasure of meeting on several occasions. And his words are wonderfully clear. It says this: nothing belongs to you. It is all like the breeze. Leave your mind as free as the breeze by not clinging to anything. This is the secret to happiness. Enjoy the garden, but do not cling to anything. This is, of course, the deep and profound message of the Buddha Dhamma as well. Punjaji goes on. He says, you wear your mind like you wear your dress. Mind is that which is desire, is past, is graveyard, is name and form, is transient. So he's very simply saying, the mind is not you, the mind is not me, it's transient, arising, passing, insubstantial. Mind is that which is desire. So of course, when we cling to any desire, any problematic desire, when we're caught up in that, we don't see clearly. We're caught in our own suffering. We take, very often, name and form, the world of names and the world of appearances, as conventional reality, and we don't look further. And Dharma teachings point to that which is not bound to name and form. Punjaji says, I is a wave, is mind, is samsara, is desire, is arrogance, is wickedness, is confusion. Identifying yourself with the I is identifying yourself with past and future. So when we identify ourselves with time, with the past, the present, or the future, when we're caught in the fields of time, caught up in it, we don't see clearly. Truth is timeless. Cling to it, and you will suffer and be stuck in it. Abandon it, liberation. And those of us who, in the room, who knew Punjaji, knew that he could be fierce and strong and extraordinarily powerful when he made such statements. So there's also a poem by the Buddha. I'll read it in a moment. But on this subject of the heart that's unobstructed or without a barricade as we explored together this afternoon. When we no longer barricade our heart, our actions are informed by love. And by love, I mean not the love of possession, but the profound love that we know and see when we no longer cling to anything. The deep love that arises when we see that this I, this me, that we call the mind, very often relate to as me, when we just see the emptiness of it. And by emptiness, we just mean that it doesn't have a substantial sense of self, in and of itself. When we see that we're not really me or mine, we're not this I that we construct, that is already to see the emptiness of self, or to see not self in the form, in the feelings, in the perceptions, in the mental formations, and even in consciousness itself. I'll explain a little more as we go along. Our practice here on retreat is one of working with all that we experience. And this is called in Dharma language the citta, the heart mind. So just when we sit down, here right now, we can know and feel the citta, the sensations we feel through the body. And we're asked to pay attention to this, and just to explore and see into it. The awakened heart mind, the heart that's free from all obstructions, is vast and immeasurable. It has the capacity to embrace the totality of all of our sorrows, all of our joys, and everything in between. It embraces our longing for freedom. Our heart that's unobstructed has the capacity to embrace all the traumas of the past, all that has been painful and difficult in the past. It has the capacity even to embrace our fears. Even our fear of death. So when we see in this way, with a heart and mind of non-clinging, a heart that doesn't cling anywhere, we experience and know the totality of life, everything. The way we experience it is the key. It's to be known and seen without clinging. I know I've said it about 10 times already tonight, but I really want you to understand that. It's just to bring an attention to all that happens in life without claiming it and saying, this is me, this is mine, this is who I am, and I'm definitely not good enough. Or I'm so fabulous and wonderful that no one can measure up to me. This is the other side, the arrogance. So, it's a way of being. A way of being without claiming, grabbing, holding. this is our practice, to be with our direct experience. Not something we think we ought to be experiencing in the meditation, the authentic experience, the actuality, as it is, as it's come to be. Okay, the Buddha's poem. There's some very short verses of the Buddha, and they're called the inspired utterances. And they're pretty sharp and to the point. They're not exactly lyrical and poetic, but I think that may have been lost in translation. So this is the first one. It just has four lines. The first line is, the unaffected is hard to see. The truth is not easy to see. Craving is penetrated by one who knows. There is no obstruction for one who sees. I'm going to take these lines and endeavor to explain them.
It's exactly obstruction.
An obstruction is a barrier, something that gets in the way. So let's take the first line. The unaffected is hard to see. This means that which is unaffected by craving and clinging. And the Buddha also called this many things. He called it the unaffected. He also called it the deathless. So the deathless is hard to see. So sometimes, as we're just walking around, indoor, or anywhere, we have those extraordinary moments where we just see a flower, a sunset, or we just hear. And the entire experience is unaffected by any clinging, it's unaffected by any desire, it doesn't have any problem in it. This is the unaffected. It's unproblematic. For example, a few days ago, I was at the Dead Sea. I have to say that my first vision of the Dead Sea, as we drove down the hills from Jerusalem, was really a sight to behold. The desert, the blue of the water, and the mountains behind, sky above. How extraordinary. What a landscape. I mean, really, I just was so moved by seeing it. Just by the very sight of something the beauty of which I was quite unprepared, I think. I'd seen pictures on the internet, but it's nothing like actually the direct experience of that landscape. Extraordinary. So when we just see in those aha moments, we're not adding anything, we're not constructing anything, we're not making anything up, we're not overlaying reality with our memory, our imagination, our drama, our trauma. And there's a great freedom in that. There's quite an exquisiteness in that. And that's just what's meant by non-clinging. Not clinging to the sights and sounds and everything else that we experience. And when we see this, we realize and know that which is conceptless. Hard to translate. Without concepts. That which is indivisible, can't be divided anywhere. Just seeing. When the Buddha was asked how he viewed the world, what he experienced in the world, this is what he said. He said, regarding the seen, the heard, the sensed, the cognized, this was the focus of Sanjay's rather lovely talk last night, and the story of Bahir. So regarding the seen, the heard, the sensed, the cognized, I abide unattracted, unrepelled, independent, free, with a mind rid of barriers. Okay, so this is how the Buddha describes his own experience.
Can you say it in normal language?
Yeah. Whatever he heard or sensed or thought about, cognized means our thinking. So whatever we know. He lived and experienced it unattracted, so without being caught up in attraction. When we see something through the sense doors and we love it, we can be swept away in the tide of attraction. When we see a beautiful woman, when we see a beautiful man, we can be swept along with our own ideas and thoughts and desires and attraction. This is attraction. We like it. We like the person. We like what we see. This is attraction. So he lived without being caught up in attraction. Unrepelled. So he lived not being distressed by aversion. Remember, we spoke earlier today about attraction and aversion. When we see things, we have an immediate feeling tone of experience. We like it or we don't like it. So, and we are attracted to the things we like, and we have aversion with the things we don't like. So that's all it's meant for. So he lived with a mind that was free. Great. With a mind rid of barriers, so without barriers. Okay?
Okay.
Yes!
Now I get it.
Okay. So, with a mind that didn't have a barrier, a barricade. We heard this afternoon this lovely inquiry where the heart is sometimes barricaded through our own fear. We put up a wall, we put up a barrier, and we no longer relate to people openly, fearlessly. We protect ourselves. And sometimes we protect ourselves so much that life can become really difficult. We shut down or contract from the world so much that we become isolated or lonely or alienated and so on. Or, as we heard this afternoon, even though we're an absolutely loving parent, we, in the moment, can find it difficult to show love to our child because our heart feels constricted, barricaded. So the Buddha lived without barriers. He let down the barrier of the heart. sometimes our experiences in life aren't beautiful, they're not wonderful at all. There's pain and there's illness and there's loss. The experience of release occurs when there's equanimity or steadiness to all that arises. And even amid our greatest suffering, there's the possibility of release. To be equanimous, to have equanimity, means not to be easily shaken by the events of the world. So it means to be steady, or sometimes it's described as balanced, but it's really that our consciousness isn't thrown about by the events of the world. We find a way of being steady, of being quite still, or being unshaken by all of the things that occur, even if they're difficult and painful things. And one of the methods, of course, of dealing with painful situations is to really turn towards the pain, to embrace the pain, or the fear, or the terror, with the heart itself. Just over 3 years ago now, the daughter of a very dear friend of mine died in an accident. She was a child who had been born on the community that I lived in. So there were many of us who knew her extremely well. She grew up with my children. I had known her parents for more than 30 years. Her mother I met on a hillside in India in the Himalayas many years ago. Her daughter, Hannah, was traveling the world, as young people do, and she was working in a bar in Greece. And she worked until quite late, and that night she and her lover, her boyfriend, went up onto the roof to watch the sunrise in the early morning. The sort of thing that most of us would have done from time to time. Stayed up all night, watched the sunrise with our lover, with a friend. So there they were on the roof. Hannah was a fearless child who'd grown up climbing all sorts of trees. We lived in a rainforest. She was a fearless horsewoman. She would ride bareback. And she probably didn't think very much of climbing out on this roof and watching the sunrise. But then, in just a single moment of lack of awareness, she stepped into a space that she hadn't seen, and she fell 6 floors to her death. So it was incredibly tragic, a completely accidental situation. So her body was brought home from Greece, and her mother, her father, myself, and some close friends were sitting with her, with the body. It was very clear at that point that we are not the body. It's just completely obvious. When we really just sit with someone we've known and loved who is no longer alive, it's absolutely clear that yes, we have a body, but we're not the body. When someone we love dies, it's also time for really deep reflection. And in that reflection, in that just being with the painful situation, there's the possibility, or the recognition, or the knowing of that which doesn't die. That which doesn't end. That which is endless. That which is limitless. So those of us who knew her well sat all night near the coffin. It was unbearably sad. Unbearably sad. Yet, there was a kind of loving beauty in it. Her father eventually fell asleep holding her hand, and it was really heartbreaking for me to see. And I sat and I meditated the entire night next to her. When we asked Ian, her father, how he was coping, he said this. He said, when I'm really with the process, when I'm really utterly present, it's okay. In other words, when his mind wandered off to something else, thoughts of the future, thoughts of the past, it was so painful, so difficult for him. So just with the attention of being utterly present, and nothing more, he found release from the pain. So this is a great bit of advice, I think, from someone who has experienced enormous loss. He just said, when I'm really with it, when I'm really present, the unbearable is bearable. We can bear the suffering. When someone we love dies, the love we feel for that person is untouched by death. This is the kind of love that I'm talking about. This is the love that we know and feel when the heart is unobstructed. So when we lose someone who's incredibly precious to us, the nature of death is irrevocable. Like, the form of the person is gone. Yet, there is the love that never dies. The love that death cannot touch. And it's vast. It's limitless. And we can know it for ourselves right now. just have to remember which line of the Buddhist poem I'm on. I think I'm still on the first. The unaffected is hard to see. Okay. So this is the unaffected. That which is unaffected even by death. The next line. The truth is not easy to see. The truth of things, of course, is obscured by all sorts of ideas we have about who we are. The truth of reality is obscured by our desires, what we want, what we don't have, what we desperately think we need, perhaps, and can't have. Or if we're separated from somebody we dearly love, we can feel enormous pain. And all of this is, or can be, problematic if we cling and hold to it. We can, of course, be with life utterly freely, and this is the goal. Desire is problematic when we cling and hold to something. The sense of I is problematic when we hold on to some kind of notion, idea. It's really only the clinging that's problematic. Life is rather free when we don't put ourselves in the way. So Dharma teachings make clear that nothing, whether it's conditioned or unconditioned, is truly a self. So, to see all of our experiences as not self.
And the Buddha said,
form is not self. So this body is not self. Feelings are not self. Perceptions are not self. Mental formations are not self. They're just ideas, notions, constructs. And consciousness is not self. It's shifting, changing. You've all been watching it all day. It's probably driving you a bit crazy seeing everything that's going on. So there's no self posited in Dharma language. So the encouragement is to see all of these things as not me and not mine. And just to be slightly clearer about what I'm talking about, when the eye lands on form, I say, I am the body. This body is me. And we can say, I'm in the body, or out of the body, or of the body. We have all sorts of relationships to the body. With feelings, I can say, I am anxious, or I am contented. This is the eye landing in the feeling world. With perception, if I shut my eyes and just open them, immediately there's perception. I know I'm in the Dharma hall at end door. I know in a flash that's where I am. That's based on memory from the past. That's perception. Mental formations. If I say, I am thinking, or thoughts, ideas, views, opinions, are all mental formations. And consciousness is the consciousness of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thought. The I, the sense of I, can land and rest and cling, or it can land and rest without clinging. It's freedom. And that's our goal. That's our aim. That's what we're endeavoring to see and know for ourselves. Even if those experiences are small, the experiences can begin and end, but the insight, the wisdom, can stay with us. for the teachings one of relinquishment from any standpoint. So it's not to take a stand anywhere. Next thing. In the text, there's a section. It says, how does a monk, in this case that's us, how does a retreatant, how do we know our experience? And it says, oh, it's a bit complicated. I'll translate in my head. We look and we see, and we see when desire is present, and we see when desire is absent. So it's visible. We see when desire is present and it's absent. No big deal, we just see it. We see when hatred or ill will is present, and when it's absent. We see when we're deluded and confused, and when we're not, when we're clear. So that's the visible teaching. When we weave our experience, we see the presence or absence of the greed, the hatred, and the delusion. We just check it out. We tune in. We see what's happening. That's our meditation practice. That's what we're doing. And some of you will have noticed that some quite strong feelings and emotions are starting to emerge. It's a very natural thing that happens on retreat. And it's a very precious and wonderful way of working with these feelings. And it's to take the attention to that place in the body where we really experience the sensations. And it's to cradle the sensations like we would hold a baby, something precious. We bring love to it. We bring tenderness to our suffering, the contraction, the tightness, the knot, the unpleasant sensation. So we just very gently come to it like that. Then we watch the shifting, changing nature of the sensations. And then we might reflect and say, is there a belief or a thought that's associated with all of this? And sometimes there's the belief or thought. It might be, I'm unlovable. It might be, I'm unworthy. It might be, I'm inadequate. Or some variation on the theme. It might be, I'm right. Or it might be, I know. So we have to see and look. And explore. And when we see the beliefs that hold our pain in place, we see that very often actually not true. Not the truth of things. Just not the truth of things. So we see into them. This is the practice. So the next line, craving is penetrated by one who knows. So of course there's the three types of desire. Desire and craving are one and the same thing. Desire in the way that it's used in Buddhist language includes a problem. It's problematic. So there's the desire that is associated with the senses, craving through the sense doors, the wanting of the pleasant, not wanting of the unpleasant. The next kind of desire is desire for being, craving for being. I want to exist, to be. I want something to exist or to be. And also the third, the craving for not being, or the craving for the absence of something. So this is the wanting mind. And of course, the wanting and the self go hand in hand. And our consciousness, when it's thrown about by desire, is thrown all over the place. So therefore, there cannot be contentment. There cannot be peace. So our practice is to see into the nature of desire. Desire, of course, being one of the great causes of suffering, and to abandon it. That's the action that goes with it. We need to abandon our desires, abandon our craving. And finally, the last line of the poem, there is no obstruction for the one who sees. The one who sees recognizes the fallacy of identity. One who sees the truth of things realizes the cessation of self and other. Me and mine. Me and the world. One who sees realizes that clinging to views leads to suffering. Clinging to our views and opinions is a great source of sorrow and suffering and pain. And one who sees knows the beauty of the heart that's unobstructed, the heart that's free. The heart that's unbound. The heart that touches the limitless, the immeasurable, the vast. And then this understanding is expressed as love. And Punjaji said, love is not an illusion. In love, all illusion is lost. Where there is no illusion, then love arises. And another, love, the heart, this moment, is the truth. To see this love everywhere, see only from love. See from heart and you will see only heart. See from ego and you will see ego. This moment of love does not belong to a me or to a you. So therefore, I am in love. So not in love in a romantic sense, but in love. So when love informs our life, all the barricades drop, and there's a precious meeting with this life that's free, that's one of release. Let's just sit for a moment or two. May all beings live with a heart of non-clinging. May all beings know that which is unobstructed. And may all beings know the freedom that is expressed as love.